Danny Meringue.
And then I went to this movie theater. This is it. I made a noise like this.
Dusty Hera.
Then this was horrible. All the people started getting sick and throwing up all over each other.
I'm beginning to like this kid, Mike.
This is Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and Portland's sports leader, 1080.
Are you good?
The Fan.
All right, we got some breaking news here as we start hour number two on Danny and Dusty. Breaking news on The Fan is brought to you by BetQL. Smarter bets start with BetQL. Download the BetQL app or visit BetQL.com today. Jake Hedberg, BeaverBlitz.com, is reporting multiple sources indicate that Oregon State All-American running back Damian Martinez intends to enter the transfer portal when it opens next week. The transfer portal, it will open on April 16th. We already have a host of guys that are saying that, you know, they intend to enter the portal. I think yesterday it was it Marcus Harper for Oregon? There was that report that he intended to enter the transfer portal from the Ducks. Don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure that's who it was. So you're going to have guys that are going to start popping up and entering the transfer portal. And look, this is tough sledding right now for Oregon State. This is the death blow, because remember, everything that Damian Martinez said following the departure of Jonathan Smith: I'm staying, I'm sticking around, I'm Oregon State through and through, all that stuff. And then, look, calmer heads prevail.
Reality settled in.
You're settling in on looking down the roster at spring ball, and you say,
oh boy,
not it. Look, this sucks for Oregon State fans. There's no other way around it. I mean, this is brutal for Oregon State. Yeah. You have an All-American running back who planted his flag in the ground and adamantly said that he wanted to be a part of Trent Bray and the Beavs moving forward in year one with Trent Bray. And for this to happen, man, it sucks. I don't blame Damian Martinez one bit. He's got to look out for himself. He's got to do what's best for him. I think that every transfer and every college athlete has got to look at it in those terms. He gave everything he had to Oregon State. But look, sometimes you take a look around at the room and you say, I got to look out for me and my future too. And this sucks for Beaver fans all around, man. This is brutal news for the Beavs.
Yeah, I don't really think there's a way you can get around it. It's just,
no.
This is the nature of that beast, and it sucks because this is now on top of the two women's transfers, and there's reportedly more coming there. The men's, which isn't nearly as impactful because they were terrible, but this is the last guy on the football team. Everybody else is gone.
You got Gray, the offensive lineman, who is probably not far behind him. I mean, that's the reality of it.
Yeah.
That is,
you're hoping that with the money that they found and the way things were going with some of their porting as far as the Super Conference and maybe Oregon State finding a way back in and all these other things, that they could just hold on.
Yeah.
And I just, how, and again, I don't fault any of these kids, not one of them. You got to do what you got to do.
Yep.
But it's just, it sucks for the Beavs.
Yeah.
That's the gist of it.
Dems the breaks, man. And look, Martinez as a player, somebody's going to get rich off that guy.
Yeah.
Man, that young man is a workhorse back. His NFL potential is through the roof. He is a projected first back off the board heading into next year's NFL draft. He's a special one, man. He is truly special. And now you look at, all right, so what does Oregon State have left in the cupboard? You got Jam Griffin, who he showed his flashes, but to have a 1-2 punch, Griffin would be that second punch that makes a backfield electric. Anthony Hankerson and Isaiah Newell. Those are the three running backs that are scholarship running backs that remain on Oregon State's roster right now. And for anything that you could say about the momentum that Trent Bray could build in this first year of the unknown that Oregon State is entering, this is a death blow, man. this is a brutal one, especially with all the skill positions that they lost to the portal, and obviously your quarterback room being decimated as well. Damian Martinez not being in that backfield is brutal for him. And now you look at, all right, what does this look like moving forward with Oregon State, and what does the future look like for this offense? Because there's tough decisions that are going to be made by the remaining players, but you look at the schedule and the way that it shakes out, you Beef fans are sitting there and they were squinting saying, yeah, maybe 8 wins. You know, I don't think Damian Martinez is a guy that takes you from 8 down to like 2 or 3, but what may follow might take you down that path, because you got the schedule has San Diego State, it's got Oregon, Purdue, you've got UNLV, which had a great year last year and kind of made a surge. Cal is always a tough out no matter what, and they're on to greener pastures in the ACC. Washington State and Boise State on the schedule for next year. That's not the easiest schedule in the world for the Beavs to navigate, especially when you're having to break in so many new positions and so many new players to the system.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking for the silver lining, and maybe I'm not looking hard enough. I don't.
There isn't.
There's just nothing there. Like, God, this is going to sound horrible. I mean, how much further ahead of Portland State are you?
A lot. You're still
miles.
You're miles. You're miles.
Miles.
Miles and miles.
On the roster right now?
Yes.
Miles.
Okay. Wait, I mean, it's not even close. I mean, that one is not, it's not even a question.
Okay, there. I'll trust you on that.
Yeah.
How much of an indictment, though, is this on Bray?
I don't think it's an indictment on Bray. I think it is. He took a look around and went, I see what left. I see what's coming back. And how he good soldiered at the beginning. And I think it helped hold together what they had of a recruiting class. But
if
you are an Oregon State fan, now you're sitting there and you're going, all right, is Josh Gray going to be the next guy to bolt? Is Grant Stark going to be a guy who takes off, and does he bolt? This is tough, because look, your quarterbacks are Ben Golbranson, and then you got the kid from Idaho who transferred in.
He's really good.
Yeah, was it Giovanni McCoy? McCoy?
Yeah, and he's got some wiggle to his game. He'll move around, run around. He was a big reason why they were good at Idaho.
I only watched a couple of games of theirs when they were like in the playoffs, and they'd throw him on at, you know, 8 o'clock at night kickoffs in the FCS playoffs, but they made it to the quarterfinals, and there's no way to put it. This is going to be a brutal dredge uphill for Trent Bray and his staff. And like the guy I feel worse for is Ryan Gunderson, who's former Beef, was down at UCLA with Chip, comes up, takes the offensive coordinator job at Oregon State. And when you have a back like Damian Martinez, that's your focal point of how you're turning this thing around. Remember, the other offensive linemen that they brought in two guys from Colorado last year. And Colorado's offensive line was a disaster. They may be big, but that was an absolute disaster of an offensive line. Now, you're not going to be playing a full Pac-12 schedule, but you got some really tough games against some pretty damn good programs, and you're going to have to put that together. You know, that, and that, to me, Danny, when you're talking about, like, how far off are you from, like, Portland State, the reason why they are miles ahead, Colorado started 3-0, and remember that?
That's fair. That's
like,
fair.
I mean, the talent of an FBS player, whether they are kickbacks from another school or whatever, you're still starting.
Yeah, that wasn't fair to lump them with Portland State. But at the same point, it was just like we see exoduses. This is something entirely different.
Yeah.
Like, this is, with the exception again of Gray, who may or may not also go, there's nobody left that you're sitting there going, yeah, that's a Power Five guy, you know what I mean? Like, where you're like, that's a dude that you can count on. And that sucks. I hate seeing that for Oregon State.
Yeah, it's brutal. You know, you do have the bright spot of you still got top five baseball program in the country, man. And they're really damn good.
Hopefully that doesn't end up being a thing that falls apart.
All right. Sorry, B fans. That's a gut punch right there. That's a death blow. Damian Martinez entering the transfer portal, according to Beaver Blitz of 24/7 Sports. Coming up next, let's go down to the Masters, Augusta. The author of Drive, about Tiger Woods in his quest to continue playing competitive golf, is Bob Herrick, Sports Illustrated golf writer. He joins us next, Danny and Dusty on The Fan.
This is Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and Portland's sports leader, 1080, The Fan.
It is Masters week, and of course, when we think of green jackets, we also think of red shirts on Sunday and Tiger Woods. Joining us now is the author of Drive, a new book out and in bookstores. Bob Herrick joins us now. Bob, thanks for taking a few minutes for us, man. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And happy Masters week to you. I know it's an exciting time for everybody that loves the sport of golf.
Yeah, it is. It's it's for a lot of people, it's, even though I'm dealing with it all the time, for a lot of people, this is kind of the real start of golf. You know, a lot of the country hasn't had good weather, and they've just sort of view now NCAA basketball is over, and you know, baseball's just started, and they see golf is just starting. So and it usually doesn't disappoint either. So it's a great week.
You know, as we enter Masters week, and you have your new book out, Drive, The Lasting Legacy of Tiger Woods. This is an incredible time. I can't believe it's been 5 years since Tiger last won his green jacket. But now we fast forward to this, and this could be a record-setting event for Tiger Woods. How do you feel about Tiger in that quest to make his 24th consecutive cut at Augusta National, when everything has kind of been going against Tiger as his body's been fighting back against him?
Yeah, look, I think it's a great example of what I was trying to capture in that book. You know, it's not the be-all, end-all record of his career. It's not something that you set out to do necessarily. Missing cuts is part of golf. You know, it happens every week. Guys miss cuts. A lot of named players have missed a lot of cuts. But to make it every year as a pro, to this point for Tiger, despite some of the things he's been through, you know, they don't always have their game. Some years aren't good. Some weeks aren't good. And to make it every time, and to try to make it here this week, especially to get that record, would just be sort of another little thing that you add to a long list of accomplishments that, to me, sort of points out his drive, you know, his resiliency. His mind works differently than most of ours. It's hard for us to not, rationalize things in our lives. Maybe we think we should get out and exercise today, and we come up with a reason not to. You know, well, I did it yesterday. I've been good this week. Or, you know, I'm kind of tired. Tiger never did that. You know, he always kind of fought through those negative thoughts, and that's why I think he has the record that he has. It goes beyond his talent and ability.
But on that point, you kind of have a unique lens to kind of view his thing through, covering him from the beginning of his pro career until now, and multiple sit downs with him. You talk about the mentality, but what's the thing that you've seen change in him throughout his professional career? Well, while the mentality has always been there, what about his personal growth has stood out to you, whether it's through injury or off the course or conquering some demon on the course? Like, what is the kind of the prevailing thing that has stood out to you over the course of his career?
Well, I think as time went on, he, you know, there was a maturity level. You know, he softened a little bit. Not so much in his resolve, but in his dealings with people. You know, he let himself be revered. He let himself be accepted and cheered. And, you know, in the early days, he never did that. You know, he had blinders on. He was, you know, the first 10 years of his career, you know, he didn't sign many autographs. He didn't look at many people in the crowd. And that evolved. You know, and he found, and I think what, especially 5 years ago, 6 years ago, when he was coming back from the surgery, the spinal fusion, you know, he allowed the fans to embrace him, and he embraced that. I think it helped him. You know, I think it fueled him in some ways. I think he appreciated the support, and their backing him meant a lot. When as before, you know, he was just sort of oblivious to it.
We're talking with Bob Herrig, who has a new book out, Drive, The Lasting Legacy of Tiger Woods. This isn't the first book involving Tiger that you've written either. You have the book out, Tiger and Phil, as well. And you've covered him for so long, and everybody in the golf world has covered him for so long. And there was a comment that he had that when the question was asked to him yesterday, it stuck with me because I knew you were coming on today, and I wanted to ask you about this because when he was asked why he keeps coming back to compete, he just said, I just love golf. Have you, in this time where Tiger has been the face of golf, ever questioned whether or not he actually loved the game of golf?
Yes, absolutely. I've wondered that at times. I think he probably does now. He appreciates it more now. You know, his son plays. He sees the joy his son gets. I think he wants to be an example for him. I think what's one of the reasons Tiger wants to keep playing, you know, to be that example for him, to give him something to watch. But, you know, I think there were times, especially when things were rough, you know, when he went through the marital strife, you know, what, 14, 15 years ago now, when he went through some of the injuries, I'm not sure that he loved golf. You know, I think there might have been some times when he was at the height, you know, like the 2004, 5, 6, 7 time period. You know, he'd been playing for 10 years, eight years, always expected to win. You just wonder if, was it a job? Was it like, I'm expected to do this? I'm expected to win? It's got to get old to like, if you finish second or third, be viewed as coming up short. You know, and you just wonder. I mean, I think someday I wonder if he'll delve into those topics because I think it's interesting. It's an interesting question. He says, because I love golf. I mean, you have to, I think, to put yourself through some of the things he's done here over the last several years, you know, but I don't always know if he did at times at other points in his career.
Do you think at this point in time, and I know it's kind of weird to even question this, but do you think he has enough magic in that tank to do something special this weekend?
I would say that if he had been playing a little bit more, if he had played two or three events this year and had a little bit of form and was able to knock off some of the competitive rust, it's just very hard to be sharp if you haven't been playing inside the ropes. I mean, Tiger can hit a lot of balls. He can chip and putt as much as his body allows. But when you're chipping and putting at home, does it really mean anything?
Yeah.
You know, when you get out here on the first or second hole on Thursday and you miss a green and you've got this tough chip and you need to hit that thing precise, can you? I mean, you know, it's because you haven't done it that much, you know. And so that's the thing. I mean, I don't put anything by him. He said today, even he said, look, you know, if everything aligns, I think I've got one more in me. If everything aligns, okay, that means his health has to be good. That means his leg has to be okay. That means his back doesn't go out. That probably means the weather cooperates. It also means that his short game is sharp. It also probably means that he gets some breaks. You know, there's a lot of things there that have to go right. I think you got to take it one step at a time. I hate to use the cliche, but, you know, let's see how he does for a round. And then, you know, if he can have a good first round and he's feeling good, well, then maybe some confidence builds.
I hope for the drive. I hope he does win for it. Yeah, he'll send those bad boys flying off the shelves even more than they already are. But you mentioned Charlie, his son, and we see Tiger, whether it's him caddying for his kid or just, you know, proud dad walking behind him. And I think that's kind of something that, you know, people that have been fans of golf for a long time, we remember every shot of Tiger on a tee box. And in those big moments, Earl was standing, you know, behind him, or he was there waiting for him to walk off the 18th green. And we also know how hard Earl Woods was on Tiger growing up, and how that he wanted to ingrain that kind of militaristic style of to maybe help that drive. What are you seeing with the way that Tiger's handling Charlie and kind of the ways that it is similar and maybe different?
Yeah, I mean, I think he recognizes that, you know, that it's tough to be the son of a great athlete. And I think he's tried to give him, you know, a lot of space and allow him to flourish on his own. If you've seen those PNC tournaments that they played in together now a few times, it's uncanny how the mannerisms are the same. You know, Charlie, you know, plucks the tee out of the ground the same way Tiger does. He marks his ball the same way. He sniffles his nose the same way. I mean, if the swing is similar. It's really kind of neat, you know. But yeah. I think Tiger's allowing him to, you know, I don't get the sense that Tiger's pushing him at all. He's talked, you know, obviously very reverentially about his own dad and how he helped his career. But, you know, the thing I keep reminding people of is that at this age that Charlie is, he's 14, 15 years old now, Tiger had already accomplished a lot. Mm-hmm. He was somewhat famous. Like, Tiger at this age was being recruited to colleges as a freshman in high school. I mean, it's just kind of like to think that Charlie, you know, Charlie's nowhere near that realm yet. He's a very, very good golfer, but I don't think he's not, you know, it's almost like, it's even hard to talk about because I think he's got a lot of growing to do still. He's going to get bigger. And I think it's still a ways to go for him before we see and can make a judgment about where he's going.
Bob, I'm always interested in the writing process of books like this where you're covering such a timeline. What's something that didn't make the book or the cutting room floor, or just a moment or an anecdote that from Tiger's career that stands out to you that just didn't make the book?
Yeah, you know, I thought I covered most of it. What I didn't get into a lot of was when I didn't do a deep dive on his amateur career. Mm. And certainly that's part of his story too, part of his drive. I try to make the argument in this book that his legacy is about more than just the great skill and talent and victories. You don't win as much as he has without all those things. But it also, you don't win as much as he has without having this inner fortitude to push through and get it done. I mean, how do you win a U.S. Open barely able to walk like he did in 2008? How do you make 142 straight cuts? It's just inevitable guys are going to miss cuts. I use this example all the time. As of right now, Tiger has missed 23 cuts worldwide in his career. He's been playing for 27 years as a pro, something like that. Turned pro in 1996. I think that's 27 years. Jordan Spieth, and I'm not picking on Jordan, okay? It's just the number I picked out because Jordan is a great player. He's won three majors, and he's what? He's about 18 years younger than Tiger. And he's missed 45. He's good missed gosh, almost geez. Double the number that Tiger has missed in his entire career. I mean, how do you do that? And most of Tiger's have come in the last 10 years when he's been hurt. You know, Tiger went 7 years without missing a cut. Sometimes you just don't have it. Sometimes on Friday afternoon, you're two over the cut line, your back's bothering you, you've been on the road for a couple of weeks, you're like, man, I really need to work on my game, or I'd like to see the family. Start thinking about the flights out of there. You get home, I'll work on my game at home, and you just kind of mail it in. Tiger never did that. I mean, and clearly, you know, obviously he was in contention a lot, but clearly there were weeks of it. And he grinded it out to make the cut. And he always had a great line. You can't win the tournament if you don't make the cut.
That's perfect. That is perfect. I mean, we remember, you're talking about his amateur career, and like out here, we have, like, I remember growing up, and I grew up out in Hillsborough where Pumpkin Ridge Golf Course is in 1996 when he won the U.S. Amateur. There was like this buzz around the area of, you guys need to check out this Tiger Woods kid. He's right down the road. And then nobody quite could comprehend what it would turn into from that moment on. And as you look at the world of golf right now, we've had stars come through. but whether it was you had Arnie and Jack for so long, and now you have Tiger Woods with this staying power. Do you think that there is somebody that can have the staying power that Tiger Woods, because the world of golf has gotten so much better around the PGA Tour as well, that will be a name and a face, not equal to Tiger Woods, but can take that mantle?
It's a lot to ask. He's such a unique character in all of this. I mean, obviously being a minority and it was set him apart also. There was a fascination just because of that. He wasn't like everybody else. And in golf, it was rare. You know, we still don't have a lot of minority participation in golf. You know, there was a thought that he would help improve that, and he has, but probably not as much as people had hoped. So there was that aspect to it. Then there was just like the whole, you know, the way he came up, like I was saying earlier, he was famous early.
Yeah.
You know, when he was in college, people went to watch him play. He won 3 straight U.S. juniors and 3 straight U.S. amps. He came to the pro game with a ton of fanfare and had already signed like $40 million worth of deals, you know, before he ever hit a shot as a pro. There was so much hype, yet, and he exceeded it, which is incredible to think about, really. You know, most people do not exceed it. So for somebody else to do that is really asking a lot. I mean, I think somebody, you know, a guy like Rory McIlroy kind of has those qualities. And he has a great record that I think is really sort of underplayed. He's won like 23 or 24 PGA Tour events. He's won 4 majors. He's only 34. I mean, if he could sustain it and get into the 30s and PGA Tour wins and win another major or two, that's epic stuff, you know, especially in this day and age. Frankly, if anybody can get close to what Phil did, Phil Mickelson, 45 wins and 6 majors. Now that, I mean, so to think about what Tiger's done, I mean, I just don't see any chance.
No.
The other thing, the part of it is the money is so big that these guys can make so much money and be set that 4 or 5 good years, and you just wonder about their motivation. You know, how long are you going to keep it going? And, So I think that just it's human nature. Again, it kind of just takes away from your, you know, from your desire. I mean, you don't need to play this game forever, you know, and as you see, windows are small. I mentioned Spieth earlier, you know, it's hard to believe, but this is going to be 9 years since he won the Masters. He won the U.S. Open the same year. He won the Open 2 years after that. He had an amazing stretch of wins in about 4 years. But since 2017, he's only won twice. You know, I mean, it's crazy that these windows can be really small. And I'm not saying he's not going to go off and win 10 more times. He might. But the bottom line is he hasn't won a lot lately.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's fleeting. Or it can be.
The book is Drive, The Lasting Legacy of Tiger Woods. Bob Herrick is the author of it. Really appreciate the time, and it's an incredible look into Tiger Woods, the competitor and the guy that we all see. And, you know, hopefully we see one more green jacket over the top of that red polo on a Sunday afternoon. Thanks for the time, Bob. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, guys. Have a good one.
You too.
You too.
He is such a unique character in Tiger Woods that his dominance is, it really is. It's like
it's
unquestioned.
Cartoon. It's cartoonish.
It's unquestioned now,
yeah.
Even though he doesn't have the majors record. Jack still owns that record and will own that record. If we're all being honest with ourselves, Tiger can say, yeah. I may have one more in me. You don't have 3,
yeah.
You know, like, and that's the thing is that it's still, everybody looks around and he's talking about it with Spieth and Rory. There's so many good golfers now.
And they're never going to come close.
And none of them are going to come close, but it's going to make it impossible for anybody to reach the heights that he reached. Yeah. He changed the game. It's incredible. Like, we have these MJ and LeBron GOAT conversations. Good luck convincing. Like, we'll have one person on the text line be like, ah, Jack is still the greatest.
No, he's not. It's fine. It's fine.
Isn't that okay?
It's fine.
But his dominance is something completely different,
yeah,
than what we have in other sports.
I think we're reaching that like across a lot of different sports
for sure.
It's because of what he talked about, the money, The motivation, just you got to be built different. Like LeBron's worth $500 million in contracts alone, but he's still there. There's plenty of other guys who've gotten paid that have been like, I'm good.
Exactly.
I'm good. So, all right, coming up next, our worst day on the web. I don't know how to say this other than this is one of the more terrifying things I've ever heard. But first, here's Big Will Betts with a Sports Center update.
It's time for today's worst day on the web with Danny and Dusty on Odyssey and 1080 The Fan.
Oh, really? That sucks.
You know, sometimes I've come across these stories and I go, that can't be real, because it's terrifying. The headline reads, Sierra Leone declares emergency after addicts dig up graves to get high on drug made from human bones.
Wait, Sierra Leone, the country of Sierra Leone, is in a state of emergency? You don't declare this after one grave robbery. This is happening throughout the country?
Yeah. Police officers are now guarding cemeteries to thwart disturbing practice of exhuming skeletons for the zombie drug.
Oh, my.
TikTok's hottest new trend, baby.
Grave robbing?
Huffing bones and getting high.
What?
Are you serious?
World?
No.
I thought it seems like
it's like the Tide Pod challenge.
Yeah. No. It's
so
NyQuil pizza.
So like for what people are wondering, like it's apparently a high that lasts several hours and can be entirely hypnotic. It sounds like
it's a rotting corpse.
Yeah. It's synthetic Kush with ground bone.
That is absolutely disgusting. And
what would make somebody be like, you know what I should do? Grind bones.
See, but we have this conversation, but at the same time, it's like, what would make a person do meth? Or what would make a person do heroin?
Or crocodile?
Or crack, or coke, or crocodile that makes you turn into an alligator. It's because you are an addict, and you are to the point where you're always chasing a high at that point, or a different high, or the longevity of one. And I, for the life of me, I don't know what gets people to just be like, yep, this is the path I'm going down. And nobody has that thought of, hey, you know what? Not only is this morally wrong that we're robbing a grave, but it's really disgusting, guys. Like, nobody's sitting there and having that conversation of like, hey, you realize that, like, we're grinding up Grammy's bones here.
But also, I mean, are they being sanitary? Are they boiling the bones?
There is no way that they are being sanitary about this.
They're not boiling the bones?
Didn't Tupac and his buddies do this? Isn't, like, when he died, didn't they smoke his ashes?
I mean, that's not this. I mean,
what's the difference?
Because
it's already cooked,
cremated, and that's also a weird move.
It's also super weird.
I have never smoked anyone's ashes.
I'm not trying to normalize this as, you know what, Tupac's buddies were right. You know, they should have.
I'm just saying it might not just only be a Sierra Leone issue.
Oh, man.
I imagine it's not, but also, like, again, just the science behind this. One, the bone has not been smoked yet.
Just stewed?
That's a.
Do we know that this problem. Is because we have a we have this text on the Vancouver Ford text line? This is literally stupider than smoking banana peels. Bones do not get you high; it's a placebo psycho effect. And I'm willing.
Well, they're doing this with in a combination with other drugs.
Okay, but is it truly or is it a placebo effect? Like they're putting it on another synthetic drug, and they're saying, like, maybe the chemical reaction gets you super stoned. This sounds, I'm willing to put money on the fact that the people that are doing this, they truly are dumb enough to think that it is actually working and it is a placebo effect. I'll agree with that.
Bro science.
A great one from Matt in Vancouver as well on the text line. I believe this is how the zombie apocalypse starts. You're not wrong. We're trending down this path. I saw Costa Rica has got a flesh-eating fly larva issue going on down there. We've got now bone smoking, which is a thing in Sierra Leone. And now,
and
with
Kush
this,
is not what you think it is over there. It's the combination of weed, fentanyl, tramadol, and formaldehyde.
Yeah, these all sound like a great idea. Yeah. So just throw a bone in there, and all of a sudden it's really ramped up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how a bone does get you high, to be honest. How does it?
Never smoked bone.
I think I'm with the texture on these people are just that dumb
sure.
that they're going to commit a litany of crimes and, you know, rip apart a corpse. And it's not doing them any good.
Yeah.
Golly.
Just an incredibly terrifying thing.
Oh, man.
Well, we can go from being disgusted and absolutely freaked out about that to being really mad about something else, too.
What do we got? We're getting big mad?
We're going to get big mad, and I think we can all collectively come together over this one. Oh. We'll get to that and more coming up here on Danny and Dusty, Danny the Fan. Oh, there's something we can all get collectively mad about.
What do we got?
It's, well, we're all mad about inflation, right? Inflation sucks.
Yes.
It's terrible.
Yes.
Every time I go grocery shopping, it's like $100 more than it used to be 3 years ago. I want to kill somebody every single time.
I've noticed, and I may be crazy on this, maybe I'm just hunting deals now, but I've noticed that at the grocery store, it's a little bit better than it was.
Maybe I don't have the options of the QVC or the Winco.
Yeah, well.
Don't hate on Winco.
I'm not hating. I'm saying I don't have the option.
No, I'm talking even at the old Safeway there. I'm starting to see some deals to be had again.
They're not as big of a kick in the Fred Meyer.
Yeah, that's true.
It's a little kick in the teeth.
That is very true.
It's also not there in the fast food world. This from Finance Buzz. The actual inflation between 2014 and 2024 is 31%. The closest companies that have maintained a level of rational inflation, commensurate, at least closely, Subway and Starbucks at 39%.
Oh, okay.
To get to the very top, where McDonald's is at 100%.
Dude, it is wild when you go there and you try to get like a Egg McMuffin meal.
Blown away.
I think it was like $8.50.
I'm actually shocked because if you would have put a gun to my head, I would have said one of Taco Bell or Burger King.
Oh, Burger King is an expensive one too, but because of the commercials.
Bro.
My turd kid was like, I want to go to BK, have it your way. And I was like, you do not rule because this is very expensive now. That one was eye-popping to see. And this should not be a surprise because the Americans are fat, dumb, and stupid, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what we are doing is we're just like, yeah, it's still a bargain to go to the fast food place. It's not anymore. Like, if you could go to a local restaurant and you can almost eat for the exact same price as going to a fast food joint now, a lot of them. From what that says right there, what is the percentage on Mickey D's?
McDonald's is 100%.
100% inflation.
100% inflation since 2014, over 10 years.
Like you can go, you honestly can. You can go to a local restaurant and you can get a deal that is just as good.
I can
and
go
the
to
food
five,
is
five
way
guys.
Better.
I can go to Five Guys.
Five Guys is
still
really
also expensive. But also, so some
love me some Five Guys.
So some price comparisons. Mm. McChicken was $1, now it's $3. Taco Bell's beefy five-layer burrito, 89 cents is now $3.69.
So good, too. That's the problem.
But the thing is, like, Taco Bell used to be the cheap place. You can't get out of there for less than $15.
No.
You should try 30.
It's nuts.
It's wild.
It's absolutely insane when you, like, the simple one here is we talked about this one off air. When we were younger, $5 footlong at Subway.
That's right.
Now you get a $6 6-inch.
Well, you didn't even have to be like when we were young. Like, that's not even a back in my day. They were hawking the $5 footlong like a few years ago.
Wasn't Mike Trout pitching the $5 footlong?
Yeah.
The Danger Witch.
God. That's where they went wrong. They invested money in that asshat.
And then it became $7.
Yeah.
The Ciara tax.
That was the dumb player tax. It's the same one the Broncos are paying right now.
Oh, my gosh. Well, this is good to keep an eye on. This is a consumer watch that you got there. That's a good one because I am very upset about that. Because the convenience, they're on to us. The convenience of like most of us are going because we're in a pinch, right? You're short on time. You don't have a lot of places to go. You got to get something, get it quick. And now we're getting gouged.
It's just... Maybe we should make this a weekly segment, our consumer report. Just
yeah.
Check in.
Let's do it.
All right.
Yeah,
we'll do a little market watch. Check-in. Make you smarter as you listen to Danny and Dusty.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Or at least
dollar
more angry.
Store. Still $1.25.
No.
That doesn't add up.
No. Hey, this is going to be a surprise
to you. It does when you start shopping there every once in a while.
The dollar store, everything in that store used to be $1. Mm.
I understand that. But $1.25 for like...
Don't
four primes. It's pretty dope. They have a $5 section now, too.
Okay, look at that.
That's where all the ice cream is. It's unfortunate.
I have a buddy who swears by dollar store steaks, and I can't.
It's good. You've never done it?
No, I will
it's
not.
It's good. You should.
You shouldn't. You should just once.
To be clear,
to
you shouldn't. It's like snail. You got to try it once. Or like frog.
There's no...
You've gone down the frog legs in escargot?
See, the problem with the frog was we were dumb, and we just, like, caught the frogs out by the high school, and then we cooked them and ate them. So it wasn't all that good, but I would try, like, legit frog. I've tried crocodile. Crocodile's good.
No, crocodile's great.
Yeah, alligator...
Gator bites are great.
Back in the day now, Pizza Schmitza used to have a gator pizza. It'd be, like, one of their... The specialty pies.
Yum.
I don't think they do it anymore, but it had
it tastes
really
like chicken.
Good.
Like I know it's always the joke,
it's like
but
a chewy chicken.
Yeah, no, it's a greasier chicken.
Yeah,
you can go to if you're in the South or Dallas area, you can go to Papa Do's and get some gator bites.
Snake,
snake also good.
Yeah, we see. Mm-hmm. I haven't had snake.
No?
Not a snake guy.
Rabbit.
Yes, I've had rabbit stew.
Yeah, that's usually how you have rabbit because it's kind of gamey. Duck.
Yep.
Quail.
Very good.
Yep. Quail Faisants. Eggs.
Quail and pheasant, both very good.
Yeah.
All the fat birds are good. Turkey, duck, goose, quail.
Fat birds are good.
Fat birds are tasty.
There we go.
We shouldn't shame their bodies.
Yeah, dang. Mm. He's a big-ass boy.
Mm. That's what you say when you bring the goose to the table.
Yeah.
I don't know that I've had goose.
Goose is tasty.
Never had it.
Really?
Sheep's
never
good.
Had never had it.
Lamb?
Same thing, right?
I don't think I've ever heard anybody say sheep.
Yeah, no.
Sheep or shorn, lamb is
he loves baby animals.
I love lambs.
He loves eating baby animals.
Veal, especially.
Oh, yeah. Veal's like baby deer, isn't it?
Caged.
That's kind of caged deer.
Yeah.
They lock the deer in a cage? That
doesn't seem
healthy.
So it can't move, so it stays standing.
That doesn't sound healthy. I'm pretty sure I saw that on Food Inc. That's gross.
All right, coming up here on hour number three, we'll take a look at the national championship and what it may or may not tell us about the draft value of Donovan Klingon and Zach Edey. Danny and Dusty, 1080 The Fan.